So I don't need a definition from you right now, but how many of you have studied critical race theory in detail? Like, how many of you feel like you've got your mind pretty well wrapped around this subject? Okay, so that's like a grand total about one half of a hand in the air of everybody. So that makes me feel like this will be a good use of our time. So how many of you have heard that phrase at least, critical race theory? Okay, many of you have, some of you have not, so let me introduce it to you. So the phrase critical race theory, the idea of critical race theory has been around for a while, but it's been getting additional attention lately. So critical race theory, just an idea of how it's being incorporated into our society. Critical race theory is in many ways the basis of the current social justice movement. Critical race theory is also the basis of a lot of the political activism that's going on in universities. Critical race theory is also the basis for much of the so-called diversity training that goes on across the country. When I say diversity training, do you all know what I mean by that? So many of you who have jobs have probably had some kind of diversity training. Some, but not all, diversity training is based on critical race theory. Another thing you should know about it is critical race theory, the thing that's brought it to center stage in our culture right now, is that critical race theory is also being incorporated into K-12 education. So that's why it's getting so much attention. The reason we need to talk about it is not just because it's getting so much attention, but also because critical race theory has a few intersections with the Christian faith. So we want to talk about it this morning, do our best to understand it. So here's kind of where we're headed with the whole discussion. We want to talk about what it is, why it matters, where it's right, and where it's wrong. And in general, the big thing I want to use this topic for is a springboard to discuss race and race relations in the Bible. Because to me, that's actually way more important than understanding every detail of critical race theory. Critical race theory is just a man-made ideology. And so like all man-made ideologies, there's going to be some truth sprinkled in there and a lot of wrong things. So what's more important for us is to know what God says about race and race relations, and eventually we'll get to that. So let me give you a pretty typical definition of critical race theory. If you don't know anything about this, I think you'll be very surprised at some of the things you hear in this class. So here's a typical definition of critical race theory. Sounds like this. Critical race theory states that U.S. social institutions, such as the criminal justice system, the education system, the labor market, housing market, and healthcare system, so all of these social institutions, they say, are laced with racism, embedded in laws, regulations, rules, and procedures that lead to differential outcomes by race. Does that definition make sense? So let me say a few more things about it. So to say it another way, critical race theory, which sometimes I'm just going to give you the acronym, which is CRT. So when I say CRT, we're still talking about critical race theory. So to say it another way, critical race theory teaches that American society, our culture, is built in a way that intentionally elevates white people and suppresses people of color. This is commonly called, a term that you'll hear a lot when you read about critical race theory, this is commonly called the racial hierarchy. The belief is that our social system has a hierarchy which intentionally puts white people on top and black people on the bottom. This is basically what would be called institutionalized white supremacy. So here's what one critical theorist says, quote, "White supremacy is a force so fundamental to America that it's difficult to imagine the country without it." So how many of you are still feeling like this is a brand new idea that you've never really heard much about before? Have you heard some of the things I've said so far, or does it feel kind of new? Okay, so you've heard some of this. We'll continue putting it all together. So still talking about a general definition of critical race theory. So critical race theory says that as a result of this flawed system that we have in the United States that is built around a racial hierarchy, critical race theory says that racism is reproduced automatically, that black people are suppressed automatically because of the system of laws and governments. And according to the theory, the structure of society recreates racism, listen to this part, even if there are no individual racists. Does that make sense? So critical race theory specifically says that racism and racial disparity is reproduced in the American system and will continue to be reproduced in the American system even if individual racist people don't exist, even if there's no hate or prejudice towards people of color. So this is the idea, the root of the idea that all whites are racist, that if you're white, you're actually a complicit part of the racist system, even if you personally have no prejudice towards black people. So all of this is part of the picture of critical race theory. How many of you, I know you've heard this one, how many of you have heard the phrase white privilege before? Okay, so white privilege is another face of critical race theory. This is the belief that the American system intentionally gives preferential treatment to whites and advantages to whites. So here's one quote again from a critical race theorist. They say, quote, being perceived as white carries social and institutional and status and identity with legal, political, economic, and social rights and privileges that are denied to others. If any of you are interested, a lot of these quotes are coming from a few different references. That particular quote came from Robin DiAngelo in a book called White Fragility. So if you want some of these references, you're more than welcome to have them. I've done my best to let critical race theorists define critical race theory. You see what I mean by that? Most of these definitions and quotes are coming from people who are advocates of this theory, and that's one of them. The belief that being perceived as white is the idea of white privilege, and that if you're white, that you have special advantages in this society that are intentionally withheld from other people. So here's the most important thing that we all should know about critical race theory. Critical race theory, among all these things that we've said so far, here's the important part. Critical race theory is an ideological engine that is intentionally designed to tear down the structure of American society and create a new social reality. So whether you agree with critical race theory or don't agree with critical race theory, you do need to know that there is a motive behind critical race theory, that the American system is racist, and therefore the solution is to call out that racism, destroy that racism, and critical race theory says that the only way to do that is to undo American society. This is the explicit goal of critical race theory. So according to the American Bar Association, which endorses CRT, here's what they say, quote, CRT calls for a radical reordering of society and a reckoning with the structures and systems that intersect to perpetuate racial inequality. So do you see how embedded in critical race theory is this activism, this underlying goal to undo the fabric of American society? And if you're a critical race theorist, I can understand why they would think that's a noble goal, because they think that racism is threaded into American society, so it needs to be ripped apart in order to be fixed. One of the things that you'll hear people say sometimes that I strongly object to, you will hear people say sometimes that critical race theory is just American history. Has anybody ever heard that said before? Yeah, people say that sometimes in defense of critical race theory, that it's just American history. That is not true. That is a lie. Critical race theory is not just American history. It is a way of interpreting history. And more specifically, critical race theory is a condemnation of the present structure of the American system. So, critical race theory, unlike what people will tell you, it is not just a catalog of facts. It's a paradigm. It's a way of interpreting those facts with an agenda, with a spirit of activism. So you need to know that as we sort through this. It's not just the facts of American history. It includes facts of American history, but it's a lot more than that, and you should know it. Okay, so here's my first big question for you. And you may have already answered it for me, because it sounds like a lot of you don't know much about critical race theory. But here's my question anyway. Where did you first learn about... It was really interesting. So when I was doing some research on this, you know, just go to Google, search critical race theory. What is it? Why do people fight about it? Like, all of the articles, the first several hits on Google, are all from the last year. So that's how much people are talking about this. And so many, not all, but many of the quotes I'm giving to you are really recent because this is a very current topic. Okay, my next question for you. Do you ever hear your peers speaking about critical race theory? So I got a few yeses. Just raise your hand. Raise your hand if you've heard your peers talking about critical race theory. Okay, so a few of you, but not a ton, actually. That surprises me a little bit just because, to me anyway, it feels like it gets an enormous amount of news coverage and gets a huge amount of attention on social media. I think more than anything, that just shows me like how old I am and disconnected from your generation, which I'm cool with that. That's fine. All right, let's carry on. So one of the things I think is really important to keep a perspective on, and I'm going to say this and just listen carefully to what I'm saying, and I think you'll understand what I mean. So critical race theory is not exactly a religious philosophy. Now, it has intersections with the Christian faith, but that's not exactly what it is, okay? And so here's something I feel like we need to make sure and say as we talk through critical race theory. Critical race theory is largely a political and legal ideology. The church is not a political or legal institution. And so as we talk through this topic, listen carefully while I say this. I am not here to defend the American culture. I love America, but I do not have a God-given responsibility to defend American culture. I am not here to defend the American government or defend American laws. That is not our priority on this discussion. Our priority in this discussion is to defend the gospel, to defend Christ and defend his church. And so I only care about critical race theory to the extent that it becomes a challenge to the church and becomes an obstacle to people obeying the gospel. And I'm saying all this just to state that I may have specific opinions on critical race theory as an American citizen, but that's not the things we're going to emphasize today because that's not what actually matters the most. The thing that matters the most is our view of critical race theory, not as citizens of the United States, but as citizens of the kingdom of God. And it's just really important that we have the self-awareness to keep those opinions separated. And sometimes that can be a hard thing to do because we live in a country that for a long time has valued Christian ideas. We live in a country whose foundation was entangled with Christian principles. And when you start to see some of those values and principles pulled out of the fabric of American society, yeah, that hurts. But America is not the church. The church is not America, and we've got to keep those priorities separated. So I see this lesson as an exercise. Here's the first scripture we're going to reference, an exercise on 2 Corinthians chapter 10. We are going to start getting into a few more scriptural references as we go along. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. What we're going to be doing on this topic is really what Paul is talking about here. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds. Then verse 5, for casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. So here's the real question we need to address. Is critical race theory against the knowledge of God? When and where is critical race theory an enemy of the gospel? That's what we'll need to sort through. One of the things that's helpful to do with critical race theory is sort of outline some of the main pillars. So if you're taking notes, I'm going to give you the seven main pillars of critical race theory. The references for this come from a variety of places. If you look at 10 different resources on critical race theory, you're going to get 10 different lists. So I'm just going to give you my list of the seven main theories, pillars of critical race theory. So here's pillar number one of critical race theory. It's the belief that race is a social construct specifically designed to oppress. So somebody tell me, like, what does that even mean? Anybody have a guess on that? What does it mean that race is a social construct designed to oppress? Go ahead. Critical race theory basically is saying that there's not actually a difference between blacks and whites, but it's been created. That distinction has been created for the purpose of oppression. And you know what? I actually don't have a problem with that. We're going to talk about that later. I don't have a problem with the idea that race is just a social construct that people have made up. I don't have an objection to that one. But here's a quote on that. The associations have been created and maintained by the dominant groups. In other words, whites, most of the time. Whites have defined the races, they say, to justify their oppression and exploitation of other groups on the basis of the latter's supposed inferiority, immorality, or incapacity for self-rule. So that's tenet number one of critical race theory, that race is just a social construct. It's not even a real thing. It's created and used for the purpose of oppression. Here's pillar number two, if you're taking notes. Pillar number two of critical race theory is that racism is embedded within the structure of American society. We've already talked about this idea a little bit. That's really the substance of critical race theory, that it's embedded in American society. And so they say on this pillar that incidences of racism, when you see a disproportionate outcome, critical race theory says that that is not a deviation from the norm, but that is the norm, that that's the expected outcome of an oppressive system. So here's another quote that goes along with that. Most people of color continue to be routinely discriminated against or otherwise unfairly treated in both public and private spheres, as demonstrated by numerous social indicators. So that's the claim in pillar number two, that racial disparity is woven into the structure of American society. Any comments or questions so far? Is this like too much, too fast? Are you guys okay? All right. All right, if anybody just like lays over and takes a nap, I'll take the hint. Okay, pillar number three on critical race theory. The claim is, all racial inequality is always caused by racism within the power structure. This is an important one, so let me read it to you again. This is pillar number three, the claim of critical race theory. All racial inequality is always caused by racism within the power structure. So, proponents of CRT say that racism is the only reason there is ever a racial disparity. Here's a quote to go with that from D'Angelo. If all humans are equal, she says, disparity in condition must be the result of systemic discrimination. They further claim, this is an important part of the theory too, listen to this one. They further claim that it is racist to suggest that something other than racism is responsible for disparate racial outcomes. Does that make sense? Go ahead. Differences in outcomes. Yep. So in other words, what they're saying is if the population of a particular city is 15% black and 85% white, then every other social measure should be represented by the same proportions. If you're talking about like the city council, the city leadership, if you're talking about the top 10 people in the graduating class, it should all have the same proportions. 15% black, 85% white. And so critical race theory says if those proportions are out of balance with the total population, critical race theory says that is evidence of racism and it's racist to say that there's any other explanation. So as you can see, I have a problem with that claim. It's an unfair argument to say this is the way it is, and if you disagree with that, you're actually a racist. That's an unfair argument. Okay, let's go to pillar number four. This is an interesting one too, and I'm going to tell you, I think sometimes this has been true. Pillar number four, legal advances for people of color are generally the result of interest convergence. So here's what that means, that legal and social progress for people of color is only allowed by white people because it tends to serve the interest of the white people within the social hierarchy. Now, I'm not saying that's true all the time or even most of the time, but I definitely think that probably has been true at different marks through the history of American society. So does everybody understand what I'm saying on that point? So the belief is, when a white person offers a new privilege to a black person, critical race theory says their only reason they're doing that is because somehow it still is benefiting the whites. That it's not because they're no longer racist. It's not because they have some altruistic motive. It's because it personally benefits them in some way. And it's not crazy to think that that sometimes happens. I just think it's unfair to say that that's always how it happens. I mean, well, let's go on to pillar number five. Pillar number five is that colorblind policy is not possible within the American system. So that's critical race theory, pillar number five, that colorblind policy, in other words, racially neutral policy, is not possible within the American system. And this is the point where you really start to see a rub with traditional American values. So starting with 1964 in the Civil Rights Act, it became illegal for there to be racism written into laws. And so the idea was that all laws should be racially neutral, that all laws should be equally applied to blacks and whites and every other version of ethnicity. But critical race theory says that doesn't work, that laws cannot be racially neutral because the American system is just too racist. Here's a quote. "We cannot employ colorblind ideology in a society that is far from colorblind." And so for this reason, most of the prevailing American ideologies, like the characteristic ideologies, the ideologies that make America America, most of those ideologies are considered racist. Things like individualism, that you're your own person, that can make your own decisions, that's considered racist. Capitalism, democracy, and then this one, meritocracy. That ideology, all of these are considered inherently racist. Has anybody ever, I'll get you in just a second, has anyone ever heard of that phrase before, meritocracy, and could you tell me what it means? Yeah, everybody follow what he said. So meritocracy is the idea that you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that you can rise through the ranks of society by your own effort, by your own skill, by your own merit. Critical race theory says that that is racist, that that's not actually how society works. Yeah, actually, if you heard what he said, that is sometimes true. So I didn't bring this quote with me, but one of the things that I thought was interesting that came out of the White Fragility book is that black individuals who do rise to the top of society and have important offices in businesses or in government, although this is not stated directly, critical race theory does imply that even those people of color are, in fact, themselves racist because they are complicit in the system, because they rose to the top and are enabled by the system and they're not tearing the system down. So anyway, all these traditional American ideologies that most people value are not valued in critical race theory. All right, pillar number six of critical race theory is that knowledge itself is a social construct. This is another place where we have a rub and an intersection with the Christian faith. Pillar number six is that knowledge itself is a social construct. That knowledge is not something you discover, but rather knowledge is something you create. Do you see how that's a totally different way of looking at knowledge and truth? Knowledge is not something you discover, rather knowledge is something that you create. And so, in critical race theory, something like the scientific method is actually considered racist because it's a white way of advancing knowledge, but the black way is through storytelling. And so, for this reason, again, scientific method, the scientific method, that way of knowledge discovery is assumed to be racist and only enabling to white supremacy. That's the conclusion of critical race theory. This position also, this is important, this position, this pillar, also assumes that minorities alone, by themselves, only they are qualified to speak about race and racism. So, in the ideology of critical race theory, I am unqualified to speak on this subject. I am unqualified to study the data. I'm unqualified to speak on racism. Critical race theory says that if they say it, it must be true. If they felt it, it must be true. And I found this to be a completely accurate picture of the way critical race theory works. So when I was reading through different articles and stuff about racial disparities in the United States, they would make a claim, and often there's a hyperlink or a footnote to the reference. And a lot of times I was thinking, well, I want to read that study. In many cases, it wasn't studies. What do you think it was? It was stories. It was just one person's story. But in critical race theory, that's allowed. That is evidence of the racism in the system. So knowledge itself is a social construct. You don't discover it, you make it. Finally, pillar number 7 in critical race theory. This is another big one we sort of touched on a little bit. Pillar number 7 in critical race theory is that traditional liberal values, and when I say liberal values here, what I'm talking about is liberty values, like values of freedom, values of individual liberty. Traditional liberal values such as neutrality, equality, objectivity, fairness in law and legal practice. Critical race theory says that all of those liberal values enable and disguise racism in our society. So another way of saying that is critical race theory believes that trying to be neutral is part of the problem, that trying to be equal is part of the problem, that trying to be fair and objective is actually part of the system that perpetuates racism. And so for this reason, critical race theory makes no bones about it. Critical race theory is intentionally subjective. Critical race theory intends to observe race relations in every form of study and scholarship. For example, one source says this: critical race theory observes that scholarship that ignores race is not demonstrating, quote, neutrality, but adherence to the existing racial hierarchy. And that means exactly what it sounds like. In critical race theory, the idea is if you don't study a subject on the basis of race, you are, in fact, a racist. And if this is a new idea to you, you probably find it just as confusing as I found it when I first started to study it. So have you ever heard anybody say it just feels like everything is racist these days? That's because in critical race theory, that's literally true. It's not even a joke. In critical race theory, that's literally true, that literally everything is racist. The entire American system, the way that we gather knowledge, everything about the system, according to this theory, is in fact racist. And if you try to study, if you try to produce scholarship without looking at racism, then you're actually in fact a racist. Hidden with all these, within these core beliefs, is a conflict with Christianity. Now, these pillars of themselves, individually, they don't all conflict with Christianity, and they're not even all completely wrong. But there is a conflict with Christianity hidden in all of this, and here's what it is. Critical race theory sees Christianity as part of the institution of oppression. And that is part of the problem here. This is why critical race theory should be bothersome, I think, to Christian people. Because critical race theory says that Christianity is the white man's religion. So to spread Christianity, for many critical race theorists, to spread Christianity is to spread white supremacy. If you are a Christian, you are probably part of the problem. This is embedded and threaded through the idea of critical race theory. Okay, I'm going to pause there for a second. We've been going for 30 minutes solid, and we're moving along, but do you have questions at this point? And it's good for us all to be reminded of this, that in Christianity, there are no racial boundaries. And if you do have racial prejudice in your mind, that needs to be erased. And we'll talk about that. Okay, just a little bit longer, sorting through the substance of critical race theory. At this point, I'm ready to kind of tackle some of these individual ideas and discuss where specific ideas are right and where specific ideas are wrong. So as Christians, to me, this is an important idea. We live in a society where everybody feels like everything has to be black and white. Everybody has to be enemies with everybody else. But as a Christian, you don't have to be like that. The world needs reasonable people. And I think as a Christian, you need to be one of those people. We have to be the reasonable ones. As Christians, we have to be the ones who have the humility, who have the clarity, and the self-awareness to look into any ideology and accept what's right and reject what's wrong. And some ideologies may be mostly right, they might be mostly wrong. But think about this. Do you think there is any man-made ideology that gets it all right all the time? Definitely not. Definitely not. And I would even go so far as to say that if we actually believe that Satan is the ruler of this world, like the Bible says he is, we have to assume that just about every man-made ideology in some way can become competition to the Christian faith. So we do need to approach all of this with a sense of skepticism. And this is one of the things that I think a lot of people in the world are lacking right now. They pick up a book and they just believe everything that's in it without any discrimination whatsoever. You should never do that. You should be skeptical of me right now. That doesn't offend me in the least. You should be judging what I say according to the only rule that never fails. And of course, that's the Word of God. And you're capable of doing that. But a lot of people don't do it, but we must. So critical race theory makes, I think, some valid claims, some invalid claims. And we need to sort through this, and we're going to look at many of the claims of critical race theory. We'll talk about the ones that are factually correct, the ones that are not factually correct, and point out a few places where critical race theory is out of line with the Bible. Okay, so I picked out five claims, that we're going to look at. And I'll give you the claim, you're smart people, capable of critically analyzing these points. And so you tell me if it's right, if it's wrong. We may or may not agree on every point here, but I still think this is a valid exercise. So claim number one from critical race theory. Critical race theory claim number one, white supremacy is real and was once accepted as real science. Yeah, great point, and I agree with everything that you just said. So you see how this is one example where we can accept something as being factually true without accepting a whole theory? It's like a good example I've heard before. Rat poison is like 99% perfectly edible food, right? But the 1% is what makes it a problem. And we can handle a lot of human theories like that. It's okay to accept what's edible, but spit out the stuff that isn't edible, right? Okay, so this is one area where critical race theory makes a factually correct claim. It's definitely true that white supremacy was a real thing, and I am disappointed to tell you that it is still a real thing in some circles. I used to think that white supremacy was completely dead. And honestly, in the last few years with some of these social justice movements, I've learned that that's not true, and I hate to tell you that. It's embarrassing for me to tell you that there's definitely still white people out there that think that black people are like some inferior version of the human race. I mean, people that I very much love and respect. I got an email one time that basically said that blacks were a bunch of jungle people unfit for American society. And I just hope that nobody has that attitude. But I feel like I needed to say that so you know that those attitudes still exist. It would be naive of us to say it doesn't exist at all anymore. Is it way better than it used to be? I think so. But it's okay to accept that some people still have wrong ideas about white and racial supremacy. Okay, claim number two. I'll read it to you. You tell me what you think is right or not right. Claim number two, all racial inequity is always caused by racism within the power structure. And I read this quote to you earlier, or maybe I didn't, but here's the quote one way or the other. This is from, again, D'Angelo and White Fragility. If all humans are equal, disparity in condition must be the result of systemic discrimination. So what's your initial thought on that? Somebody give me one sentence. I got a thumbs down. Somebody give me one sentence telling me why you agree or don't agree with that. So on this claim here that all racial inequity is always caused by racism, this is a point where I think critical race theory is obviously wrong. And I think that most critical race theorists probably know that they're wrong. But let's acknowledge one thing. It is true that there is sometimes a disparity in outcomes between blacks and whites. It's okay to acknowledge that sometimes that is true. I think this was probably much more true before the Civil Rights Act of 1964, but it is probably still true sometimes today. I'll give you one example here. This is one place where I actually did find some decent-looking research. Quote, research documents that white people with a criminal record are more likely to get called back for a job than black people without a criminal record. Now, I didn't see the entire context of this study. It looked legitimate. And it does sound like that sort of thing actually does happen to an extent in our society. That there is this embedded prejudice towards people of color. There's this assumption of maybe criminal activity that isn't getting reported. And so when it comes to applying for a job, it does sound like there's some disparity there. There's other places where you see a disparity too. The most influential institutions in the United States, when you think about like the presidents of companies, when you think about local and national governments, what's the overwhelming race of those upper-level organizations? Yeah, they're overwhelmingly white. They're overwhelmingly white, and the proportions do not match the proportions of society. It's okay to acknowledge that there obviously is some disparities in outcomes, right? But here's the point. Is it fair to assume that all disparities in outcome are the product of systemic discrimination? And so let me just say a lot of the things that people are sometimes uncomfortable saying. Why wouldn't we apply this logic to other areas where there's an obvious disparity in racial outcomes? For example, my son asked me this. Why are football players mostly black? Is it because of systemic discrimination in the NFL that most of the most talented NFL football players are black? Well, no. But if a 9-year-old can see that there's a difference in outcome, I think we can acknowledge that. Why are rapists mostly men? Why are prostitutes mostly female? Why are violent crimes mostly committed by men? Does anybody know the ethnicity of the overwhelming percentage of spelling bee champions? Indian American. Yeah, did everybody know that? It's unbelievable, right? When I was in an honors orchestra, a state honors orchestra, my senior year of high school, there was a racial group that was disproportionately represented in the orchestra. Does anybody happen to know what ethnicity that was? Yeah, it was Asian, right? Obviously disproportionately represented. So why does nobody claim that all of those disproportionate outcomes are the result of some type of systemic discrimination? Go ahead. Yeah, so that's the honest answer, is because it's not a disproportionate outcome in favor of whites. So my conclusion here, I'll get to you in just a second. My conclusion here is that there are obviously biological and, like we've said, social and cultural forces at play. Now, are there some maybe systemic discrimination issues happening? Well, sure, that could be part of the equation, but it's not fair to say that that's all of it when it's obviously not true. Yeah, you're exactly right. So there's like just some statistical reasons that kind of thing is always going to shake out in a way that is a little bit anomalous. Yep. All right, claim number three. Still kind of going through the mental exercise of recognizing what's right and what's wrong. Oh, man, like we're supposed to quit on this 1 minute ago. Let's finish this part of the notes, and then we'll take a break. I got permission from the elders that we can sort of flex the schedule around a little bit today, and I feel like you seem interested in this topic, so we'll carry on with it here in a minute. Okay, claim number three of critical race theory. Individual success is affected by a person's social environment. Individual success is affected by a person's social environment. Yeah. And the problem, I think, sometimes is some people don't know that there is a way out. You know, they're generation after generation after generation. So this is an area where I agree with the conclusion that to a certain extent, individual success is affected by a person's social environment. I'm not saying it controls it, but it definitely affects it. So let me give you a scenario. So consider two black boys that are biologically identical. One is raised in the suburbs. One is raised in the inner city. The one that's raised in the suburbs has a complete nuclear family with a father that works for a living and a mother that loves him. Okay, that's scenario number one. Scenario number two is an identical black boy raised in the inner city by his drug-addicted mother. His father's nowhere to be seen. Most of his community is involved in gang activity. He's taught to believe that white people are your enemy and that successful black people are defectors. So, who's most likely to be successful? Right? Obviously, environment has an influence on the potential outcomes. It does not control it, but it definitely affects it, and it's okay for us to acknowledge that. I try not to say things that aren't true either. If you do put together a thought that is completely true, feel free to make that comment. I'm not even sure if everything I'm saying is completely true. That's why I'm saying we all have to always be skeptical. You guys have brains and you can use them. So I agree with you 100%. But critical race theory says that what you just said is actually racist. To propose that something other than systemic racism is part of the problem. See, we just all agreed that the social environment has an influence on outcomes. Critical race theory say that whites are responsible for that social environment. Okay, let's go to critical race theory claim number four. This is another big one that rubs wrong with Christianity. Knowledge is a social construct. I don't even need to ask you this one. I hope that we all agree that this is definitely wrong. In other words, critical race theory claims that truth is our own creation. Like I've said it a few times, you don't discover truth, rather you create truth. This is false and very dangerous. So now I will ask you why. Not why is it wrong, but why is it so dangerous to believe that we construct our truth? What you're bringing up is a really important distinction. The Bible teaches that truth is always truth, but it's okay to also accept that sometimes our perception of truth can evolve over time. But what truth actually is, actual knowledge, doesn't change and has never changed. And it's our responsibility to get the right angle on truth so that we can see it clearly. But it's dangerous to assume that the perception of knowledge is the knowledge itself. Yeah, and most importantly, this whole idea of truth being fluid and a creation of your own experiences is just fundamentally out of line with the gospel. You can't believe that and believe the gospel. But that idea definitely gets dripped into people who think they believe the gospel. This is where the idea comes from. Well, yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah, I'm saved through Jesus, but you might be saved another way. Right? Obviously, that's not how it works if you know and believe what the Bible teaches. Okay, last thing, and then we'll take a break. Critical race theory claim number five. The claim is, whites intentionally misrepresent history to disguise America's history of racism. This kind of relates back to what I said earlier, that sometimes you'll hear people say that critical race theory is just American history. And so the problem there is then when you object to critical race theory, the response then is, well, you're objecting to American history, that you're objecting to acknowledging the racist history of American society. And I just have a problem with that, and I personally don't think that agrees with reality. You know, my little reality is very small, and I realize that there definitely could be circles out there that I'm not familiar with. But let me give you one example. So, and again, that book called White Fragility, where D'Angelo is kind of laying out this case that whites intentionally misrepresent history. The story that she uses relates to Jackie Robinson. And I'm going to read you her description of what she says whites do to the Jackie Robinson story. And this is where we're going to finish. She says, "The story of Jackie Robinson is a classic example of how whiteness obscures racism by rendering racist institutions invisible. Robinson is often celebrated as the first African-American to break the color line and play in Major League Baseball. While Robinson certainly was an amazing baseball player, this storyline depicts him as racially special, a black man who broke the color line himself. The subtext is that Robinson finally had what it took to play with the whites. as if no black athlete before him was strong enough to compete at that level. I've never heard a person describe the Robinson story like that, ever. In fact, I was so disturbed by this, any of you who are friends with me on Facebook, I posted a question to Facebook without any context, just saying, tell me, you know, in one sentence, the story of Jackie Robinson. Nobody, none of my white friends explained it like that. So I have to think that this is a straw man argument. Now, when I say that, does anybody know what that means? Tell me what it means. Like, what's a straw man argument, Peter? It's like if I'm having an argument with you, I will tell everybody that Peter believes this, and I'll make up some really ridiculous, absurd belief that Peter doesn't actually have, but I'll say that he has it so that I can tear him down and win the argument. That's what's happening here. It's a straw man argument. I'm setting up a false narrative just because if it was true, it would be terrible and easy to tear down, but it's not true. And I was noticing as I read through, some of this information about critical race theory, that was happening a lot, where I was being told how I think as a white person. And, you know, I was reading this with some skepticism. I kept thinking, no, that isn't how I think. That's not how I see this at all. Now, I also have to accept that as a Christian, I also believe that my mind is continually being transformed by the Spirit. And so maybe it is possible that other people don't see it that way. But I'd like to think that through the Spirit that I've been able to overcome some of those prejudices if they did exist. We should stop for now. So let's take about a 5 or 10 minute break and then we'll get back together. And I don't know what we'll talk about next. Should we go on to something else or do you want to carry on with critical race theory? What was that? Carry on? Okay, because we're not even close to done yet. So, all right, take about a 10 minute break.